the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Google tip.
Google up John McCain's response to President Trump yesterday. A dying man's response to how to be presidential. It's pretty moving stuff. Kevin Graham is here. Kevin is the president of Fraternal Order of Police. I appreciate you getting up and coming in here. You like the studio?
This is a beautiful studio.
Why can't I hear you? There you are. Sorry, Kev. You said it's a beautiful studio?
And a great view.
Not bad, right?
Yes.
Let's give folks your background. Before you were president of the FOP, what were you doing?
I was a policeman working footbeat in Uptown. I have been a police officer for more than 30 years.
And thank you for that.
I can't tell you, it's the best career anybody could choose. I used to make a difference in everybody's life every day, and it was very rewarding.
So were you recruited to this? Were you urged to do this? Because you got a guy that's been around as long as you have, you know what a pain in the ass being the FOP president would be. Why get into politics?
Well, I had always been the unit representative in our district for the last 20 years.
Okay.
And then,
so you know what you're getting into.
I did. I was the vice president of the state FOP, but I felt that there was a need to run for president. There was a lot of issues that needed to be addressed, and so I did, and that's where I'm at right now.
Over the weekend, there was a shooting and a death. And I'm trying to find the young man's name here in this story quickly. Harif Augustus, he shows up outside a store. Officers have a conversation with him. And then, unfortunately, we live in a time, which you well know, that video takes over, and then the public gets to decide what really happened, even though none of us were there.
Yes.
It's eternally frustrating to me, and I'm not a cop. And I don't know how often you listen to this show, but for full disclosure, I'll take the cops' backs first and then decide from there.
Well, thank you.
I would assume that you would also admit that, like any facet of the world, any business, there's good guys and bad guys. The bad guy percentage is very small, but they have a possibility to make it bad for all the good guys.
That's always true. One of the problems is that it's a very dangerous job. When we take a look at video, we have to make sure that we have all the facts. We have to take a look at it. We may have to make sure that the narrative is correct. We have to make sure the camera angles are correct so it captures everything. So
stuff that never used to be a part of being a cop.
No, you're absolutely correct. Right. That has changed in the last 2 years, and part of our negotiations and our contract are about body cameras and what footage is correct to be released, and what part of being in the station talking to other officers is not part of interactions with the public.
Eddie Johnson stepped up and said, we're putting this out in a day because the tensions are too high and the heat's too high right now, and we want you to see what happened. There was also a fair amount of confidence that seemed to be justified by the video that the officers acted in the way they were trained and the way they should respond in a case like that. The one but I would have here is, what happened to the sound?
Okay. What happens is, if you have the camera rolling all the time, first of all, I don't think the city of Chicago could even afford to hold the data from 500 cameras 24 hours, 5,000 cameras 24 hours a day,
right?
7 days a week. You activate the camera when you have interaction with the police.
Sure.
The camera is always rolling, but it doesn't start recording until you hit the button, and it actually goes back to a buffer 30 seconds prior to that.
Is that a technical glitch? It seems like it should record immediately.
It's the design of the cameras, right?
It is the design of the cameras. We have no control over that. That's the camera's manufacturer.
Is that standard around the country? I mean, is there one vendor that tends to sell in New York and Chicago and L.A.? Big cities?
There are a few different vendors, but most of them are the same. I think the 30-second buffer has been true with our in-car cameras in the vehicles as well. That has always been the case.
Well, I think it's important for the public to understand that, because the immediate assumption for folks who don't want to take the side of the police is, what are you trying to hide? Yeah, because the sound's not there.
I think it's It's an invention that the camera is always rolling, but when you hit the button, it actually goes back 30 seconds. That doesn't mean you can record 30 seconds of sound, but it does mean you can record 30 seconds of video.
It does seem like it's an inherent flaw in the system that the technological side, the tech side, the camera people need to fix. Because in the world of instant judgment, the most evidence that you could have supporting your side would be the most important, and not to have those kind of gaps. I don't want to make this a discussion about the Apple Store, but I think it's an important part of this.
Well, you know, I think the more interesting part is that it is clear that he has, that the offender in this case has a gun, goes to pull the gun out, and people are still saying, well, I don't see what he's doing wrong. We're not going to wait until officers are shot before we start to react.
What is the rule of engagement? Because I listen, I agree with you 1,000%. And this is not a TV show. You're not trained to shoot them in the foot. You're trained to stop that individual before they shoot you or shoot someone in the area. That's the way it should be. That's the way the training should go. So is the training that someone sees a gun, says it to everybody else, and you're then in a position to take action? Because the thing that everybody loses sight of, these are split-second decisions from people that go to work in the morning and have no interest in pulling a gun on anybody.
You know, you bring up an interesting point. It's easy to sit back in your living room, watch this on television, and be a Monday morning quarterback. It is extremely different when you are the person there. You have to make a split second decision, and there is no let's look at the replay. You have to make that decision then. That person certainly could have shot several police officers or citizens, and the officer who took decisive action was justified both in policy and in law in what he did.
There's a, Ms. Graham, there are protesters, community members of South Shore. There's a great column this morning in the Sun-Times. Just question the relationship between the police and members of that community. How do you see the protests and what have happened after the shooting here in Chicago?
Well, first of all, I think we, in general, do have a good relationship with the community. The people who are protesting, I don't believe are ever going to be happy. That's one of the reasons why they want a citizens review board. They want to keep taking bites at the apple until they get their way. The justice and the correctness have nothing to do with what they're protesting about. And a lot of this has to do with people who are being paid in the community to be activists. And that has not been addressed. I don't know that this is the right forum to be addressing that.
Well, I can understand that. I've heard that argument, but the Justice Department did come forward with a consent decree saying that one of the issues was a deteriorating relationship between the black community and the Chicago Police Department. So beyond the idea that this may be paid activism, there seems to be from a higher level, at least an addressing of that issue. As you see this play out in Chicago, and Chicagoans get to see this on their television sets, you know, protests and violent protests. What do you think? I mean, does there have to be some lip service paid to by the Fraternal Order of Police about the relationship that continues to play out in these situations?
Well, the people I deal with are the people with the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department. And I have said since the day I took this job is that we do need to have the best relationship we can have in the community, that I have encouraged the police department to put more foot officers on the street. I have encouraged the police department that on Sunday mornings when people are in their house of worship, whatever that house of worship, that they encourage police officers to stop by so that there can be interaction. On a not that I'm promoting any one religion. I'm saying that this is a place where people can walk up and talk to the police and there can start to be relationships there. I do believe in that.
Are you feeling progress?
Excuse me?
Are you feeling progress in that area? Or does it depend on the neighborhood?
I think it has to depend on the policy of the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And the superintendent and I have not addressed that recently. I did speak with him yesterday, and I believe we're going to be speaking again today, and I'm going to bring that up again.
There's three levels to this, right? There's the combined history of things that have happened with the Chicago Police Department, good and bad, what's happening now and what can happen in the future. The these things need to be dealt with in present time, not in accumulated anger over time in the past. And I think that's part of what you're seeing here outside of the paid activism that you're talking about. But I also want to get into the media piece of this in a second,
sure.
Because in the same way you guys don't want to be thrown into one big police bucket, the media doesn't want to be thrown into one big media bucket either. So I want to talk about some of the comments that were attributed to you yesterday.
So I think it might be helpful. We only see videos when there's an incident where somebody's shot or treated poorly, you know, a tussle or whatever. If we got to see police videos where somebody approached somebody, I have a gun, okay, you know, like, and it ended not in a shooting or, you know, that sure. These, so then maybe these people that are, maybe he was scared to say, I have a gun, because he doesn't know how that's going to turn out after.
Mm-hmm.
If they saw it proper. There's a texter from the 630 that's a truck driver in that area the last 40 years. He said anytime he's been pulled over, he says, I have a weapon, and they say, okay, and never have had a problem.
There's a concealed carry guy.
Yeah, you know what I mean, though? If we saw some of those end better, then we could say, okay, this does end okay more times than not, probably, than just the videos of where there's a...
Something goes wrong.
Well, yeah. I think you hit on a very key issue, and that is that when people comply with the lawful orders of the police, the situations end well. It's when people refuse to comply with the lawful orders of the police, they don't put their hands up, they don't surrender, they want to fight, they don't end well. And I think you saw that in this video. I think you see that in most of these situations that don't end well. So I think you bring up a very good point.
All right, we've got to take a break. We're way late here. And then we'll come back more with Kevin Graham in just a moment, Fraternal Order of Police President.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
We're going to need to continue this conversation, Kevin Graham, Fraternal Order of Police President, because obviously you can't knock this down in two segments. Having said that, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was a Sun-Times story where you seemed significantly upset with the media, and the media was thrown into one big media bowl. Here's the problem with that. When everybody throws all the cops in one bowl, it's not fair. When everybody throws all the media in one bowl, it's not fair either. I don't disagree with what and I wanted to ask you about this. Your essential premise seems to be is that there is a jump to moment where people go, the cops did it again, as opposed to what happened. We all need to take the what happened approach here, and I do think there are folks, including this show, that are more reasoned in that approach. You disagree with it?
No. There are many media outlets that have looked at things in a fair and objective manner. The show's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what had happened was over a series of events at FOP, we were beginning to get very frustrated with reports, whether it was about the consent decree, about the contract, and about various incidents that were occurring around the city.
Right.
That the media was jumping to conclusions, and I do think that we do have many friends, and sometimes you're correct. We need to separate out those particular media outlets that are not being fair to the police with those that are.
Do you have an opportunity in your position now to sit down with a news director at any of the TV stations in particular and say, "You guys cheap shotted us there. That wasn't fair, and here's why it wasn't fair."
No, we haven't. We haven't.
I'd encourage you to do it. I'm not saying it's 100% successful, but I'd encourage you to do it, you know, from that perspective.
You know what? You very well could be correct, and I'll tell you, we will look at that this week.
And then I'd like to know the people that aren't cooperating, because then I'll talk about them. Last word, Justin.
A lot of this has to do with transparency. We saw that the superintendent put out the video within 24 hours of this event, a lot maybe to quell the protests and to give the city of Chicago and the area a better understanding of what happened. But I don't understand the precedent, because in the Laquan McDonald case, it took 300 and some odd days to get a video. I've heard as well in the next couple of days that they won't release the other parts of the video or any other evidence that might be out there to give a bit clearer picture to what happened from the moment of engagement to what we saw on the video. So what is the policy? Where does the FOP stand when it comes to releasing videos or being transparent?
We believe that the videos are evidentiary in value. It is about a fair process, both to the public and to the officer. We are not in favor of just throwing those videos out there right away. I understand what the superintendent and the police department did by putting it out there because there was demonstrations and they wanted to show that there was clear and decisive evidence that the person had a gun and was a danger to the public. Having said that, I think it's important to realize that the cameras that are being used have wide-angle lenses. And so there has to be a narrative, because one of the things you have to make sure you tell people is that people are closer than they appear. The reason they're using wide-angle lenses is to capture as much information and much background as possible. And I understand that. But there has to be a narrative so that people understand what they're looking at.
The problem, though, and I think this is why there are body cameras in the first place, is that the narrative of police in the past, and I specifically talk about the Laquan McDonald case, showed a narrative that they said, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened, and then a video came out and it disputed what happened. And there was a question of whose narrative should we believe?
Well, I understand what you're saying in that. As I've said over and over again, we had the Fraternal Order of Police has never had a hand in the control of any videos, whether or not they have been released or not released. And so what has changed between then and now is that there is a unit that now goes through these videotapes from the police department. And what we have been asking is, put a narrative with it. Explain what is going on. And that's what we have asked the department to do. Now that there's a unit in place, I think that people should feel confident. There has been a great deal of change in the last 2 years in the police department, and there needs to be some credit given to those people who have made those changes.
I agree. I don't want to leave without getting Rosemary's question in, and I don't have time to pick up the phone and talk to her, so let me ask it for and this is a question a lot of people have, because I think it's one of those things where it's not a stupid question, it's a question. Why is the training such that you can't shoot to disarm as opposed to shoot to end it?
There's going to be a split-second decision. You have to eliminate a threat, because certainly if they take out the police officer, then you're going to have a larger threat that is out there, and now we're going to have to we're putting the public more in danger if we don't make those calls. It is never easy to take a life. And the idea that we're doing this carelessly or recklessly is ridiculous. The officers who are involved in shootings live with those for the rest of their lives.
Right.
They never forget it. It's a daily reminder of what they need to do. But they still go out and do their jobs for the rest of their careers. And they should be commended for that.
No question. And thank you to you for all the years you've done it, and everybody else as well. The 99.9% of men and women that work for the CPD and the police departments across the country are doing the right thing. And unfortunately, the news is about the very small percentage that aren't, or that we assume aren't. In this world of cameras, it's made it even tougher. But we need to talk about the protest part of this and other things, too. So will you come back?
Absolutely.
All right. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming over.